From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the blob is not only back, but it turns out it never really left us. And so how is climate change affecting our fisheries? All that, and could offshore surveys be predicting an improving king run on the Yukon? And more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
Another season of offshore sampling for juvenile salmon near the mouth of the Yukon finished up earlier this month. The federal and state collaborative project uses small mesh trawl nets to catch several hundred young salmon of various species. Through genetic testing, researchers are able to determine where the fish are from. Most juvenile salmon caught are just emerging from the rivers to spend their first winter at sea, and most come from the Yukon drainage. Dr. Katie Howard is a fisheries biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and is one of the project managers. She reports that while definitive statements can't be made until all the data are analyzed, things are looking good out there.
The juvenile king abundance was pretty good. I don't know if when we run all the numbers it's going to be the best we've seen, but it seemed pretty strong. And so that will make this the fourth year in a row where we've seen pretty good abundance of those juveniles. And those fish will mostly be returning 3 to 4 years from now.
Data from the offshore sampling project are used to generate preseason forecasts for specific salmon runs on the Yukon. And this year's prediction for a king salmon run, numbering around 175,000 fish, was right on target. But when it comes to forecasting next year's Yukon King Salmon Run, there is some disagreement between traditional forecasts based on past escapement numbers and the forecasts derived from sampling juvenile salmon at sea. Escapement numbers alone suggest that the Yukon could be heading into some more lean years for kings. However, Howard's research has led a prediction of a relatively strong 2017 king run, improving upon this year's run and possibly allowing for expanded subsistence fishing opportunities. Howard suggests that even with low escapement counts in the early part of this decade, it might be that the juvenile salmon survival rates are improving.
It looks like something has changed recently, where there are more of those eggs that are, you know, surviving and becoming fry and becoming smolts and going out into the ocean and surviving their first few months in the ocean. And that's all really encouraging compared to what it had been, you know, not that long ago.
Howard's team also collects environmental data at sea and has noted an increase in water temperature in the northern Bering Sea over the past few years, with this year being one of the warmest on record. She says that presents a bit of a mystery with regards to the data they've collected on juvenile kings, since the prevailing theory was that an increase in water temperature would harm them. The Offshore Juvenile Salmon Sampling Project is funded in part through the Chinook Research Initiative, which started amid historically low king returns around 2012 and 13. Fish and Game partners with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to conduct the research using 60-foot trawl vessels in the waters north of Nunavak Island and south of St. Lawrence Island. After combing through data in the Aleutians, a scientist has discovered an unexpected relationship between plankton and pink salmon. Although plankton might seem like an ecological afterthought, biological oceanographer Sonia Batten disagrees. She calls them the most important organisms in the ocean.
They're the basis of every marine food chain, pretty much, and they support directly or indirectly all of the resources that we value.
That means even if a species isn't eating the plankton itself, its food source probably is. Scientists consider plankton good indicators of what's happening in the environment.
Because they have short life cycles, and because they have very limited ability to move, and because they're not commercially fished, they react very quickly to changes in their environment in a relatively unambiguous way.
Batten has 15 years of data from plankton surveys in Alaska waters. That involves dragging a net behind commercial fishing boats. When there are a lot of pink salmon, they eat up a lot of animal plankton. But when pink salmon numbers are low, the animal plankton flourish. Those impacts are permeating the entire food chain past their immediate prey. And if the pink salmon eat a lot of plankton, there may not be much food left for other predators. In 2013, she started seeing something unusual.
This was the first time that I've seen the fish actually influencing the plankton.
2013 was a bumper year for the humpies. The data began to look different. Batten didn't see that big decrease in plankton. And the question she was left with was what changed.
Pink salmon were supposedly in really high numbers in 2013, so I would have expected to see the same pattern, but I didn't. So that suggests that something's going on in the environment that I don't know about yet.
She says it could be that the salmon are eating something else. And she's planning to continue looking for answers.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Well, the blob is back. Never really went anywhere. It was just hiding. The term was coined a few years ago to describe a patch of warm water out there in the North Pacific that has turned the weather warm and dry in the state the past couple of winters. Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist in Anchorage who closely tracks Alaska climate data and trends. Alaska's Energy Desk is checking in with him regularly for the segment Ask a Climatologist.
It's always been there. It's just been hovering below the surface. So if you looked at surface temperatures, sea surface temperatures, it kind of looked like it was getting back to normal. But all that warmth was just kind of pushed down a little bit, and now it's making its way back to the surface, and it really looks like the blob again.
And when you look at a map of this, it's really striking. Can you kind of describe what that looks like?
Right. So when you look at these maps of sea surface temperatures, the ones that have been released the last few weeks, you just really show this very pronounced warm water anomaly sitting just south of mainland Alaska in the Gulf of Alaska. Of course, the colors they use in the maps for in general for above normal conditions are red. So you've got this kind of red circle sitting below Alaska, and it really does look like a blob.
What effect does this have on Alaska?
When there's warm waters that surround Alaska, it really promotes warmth temperature-wise, surface temperature-wise here in the state. It also affects the upper-level patterns. The last time the blob was really this pronounced, we had a strong upper-level high pressure that set up, and that really kept us dry. And then to the downstream side of that, in Canada and the northern part of the lower 48, that actually drove their winds, made it come from the north, so it actually made it kind of colder and snowier over there. But over here in our part of the world, it promoted above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation.
With coastlines eroding, temperatures rising, and sea ice in retreat, Alaska is feeling the effects of changing climate. But a new federal report suggests so far fisheries in the state haven't experienced many observable negative effects of climate change. Zoe Sobel tells us more.
Commercial fishing in Alaska is a multi-billion dollar industry. For 18 consecutive years, fishermen have hauled more fish into Dutch Harbor than anywhere else in the country. But at this point, researcher Terry Johnson says climate change isn't a hot topic in the industry.
Now, we're not talking about next year, but we're talking about within this century or within the working lives of young people who are just coming into the fishery now.
Johnson says interest in the topic is growing among fishermen. He isn't a biologist. As a researcher for Sea Grant, an offshoot of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, he synthesized hundreds of scientific papers, interviewed scientists and stakeholders, and combed through popular media to compile this report. Johnson says climate change will have different effects on different fisheries. Some fish like salmon might do better in warmer waters, while pollock and crab might fare worse. Johnson says short-term ocean warming events like El Nino or the blob could preview the long-term effects of climate change on fisheries.
If 50 years from now, the long-term ambient temperatures are the same as they were last year during a short-term event, you can see how stocks reshuffle themselves and some prosper and some diminish.
Johnson says so far observable impacts of long-term climate change on Alaska's fisheries have been relatively mild. Commercially important fish species are prospering, while sport and subsistence resources are within normal ranges. Exceptions like the sweeping decline of Chinook salmon could be tied to climate change or ocean acidification, but the research isn't there yet. And Johnson says seeing Alaska's future is as easy as looking south.
You want to know what Alaska's going to be like 100 years from now? Well, look at Washington, because the temperatures are warmer there. And, you know, if nothing changes, eventually we're going to get a similar kind of long-term temperature increase here.
Johnson says fishermen deal with change all the time. The fishing industry is constantly adapting, from market collapses to advances in technology or shifts in resource management. Johnson says that flexibility has primed them so they can adjust to climate change. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
Kodiak Island Borough Assembly held a special meeting last week with just one purpose, to review and pass a letter that it's sending to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council in conjunction with the City of Kodiak in regards to the rules the Fishery Council is promulgating to rein in Gulf of Alaska trawl bycatch. Assemblywoman Rebecca Skinner, who serves on the Kodiak Fisheries Work Group, explain the need for the letter at this time.
When you have a new program, you're changing the regulatory system. And so we're concerned that when you make those big changes, we don't know what's going to happen. And so we want to make sure to try to protect Kodiak.
Assemblyman Larry Ledoux agreed that protections for the community are necessary given past experience the community has had with new fishery models and how they affected Kodiak.
During the crab rationalization discussion, there was discussion on inserting into the legislation delivery requirements to Kodiak. And that didn't happen because the process is assured that they would take care of that. Well, that's just an addendum, of course, and that's the reason why, you know, we need to stress that. We know the history of what's happening, and that would have been the answer to Commissioner Cotton. We have evidence that once this happens, you know, we have no guarantees.
The letter quotes from a study the Borough and City Commission that outlines the financial investments the city and industry have made to support the fishing industry, as well as the number of jobs and the resultant income that is generated by it. Directly or indirectly, commercial fishing and processing account for about 30% of all personal income in the Kodiak Island Borough, which amounted to $236 million in 2014.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Alaska Energy Desk's Zoe Sobel and Annie Feit, and KIYU's Tim Bodoni. From KMXT, I'm Che Barrett.